It's very interesting that aberration is very hard to maintain. Let's say this fellow is he's an accident prone. He takes an automobile out and runs it into a brick wall. And he takes an automobile out and he runs it off the edge of an embankment. And he takes an automobile out and he runs into another automobile. And he takes an automobile out and he leaves it parked on the train track. And so forth. You let him come anywhere near this automobile. Well, all of us have accidents to some degree, but he is carrying it to excess. And sooner or later, somebody's going to notice the number of accidents this character has. And if you as an auditor noticed this, and you were just doing this job just for this thing in view, it just knock out the number of accidents this character was having with an automobile. You could first find out what he is having. In other words, he might be having wrecks, or he might be having accidents. Don't you see? You have to find out what is he having. That is necessary, because you sometimes are very sure you know what the fellow is having, but that isn't what he is having. See? He might be having physical injury. See, not accidents at all. He might merely be having physical injury. So you have to isolate that factor. And that would be the stage of analysis. This doesn't take very long, by the way. This is nothing very laborious. This is more or less off the cuff. Sometimes it's enough to listen to him on the subject of these things, and he labels it several times for you, so you just use it, you see. That's the ordinary off-the-cuff assessment. Nevertheless, you have to dignify it with an assessment. It's also the clarification of the auditing command. You say, all right, now how would an automobile accident make you right? Or how has it made you right? Or any such thing as this. And you expect he's going to have to sit there and fumble with this for quite a while. Oh, no, brother, that is, if you've spotted it, that is sitting right on top. That's the easiest ITSA line you ever had anything to do with. And also. All right, now you've got to keep this thing balanced because you might run into a GPM. So don't leave him on one side of it. You see, the GPM would say just right and wrong. You've personalized it. So it's how would it make you right, and how would it make them or another wrong? You understand? Them wrong, you right. That is the way you bias this thing. You understand, the GPM is totally, doesn't care. There's just right and wrong, so that you could also play this thing the other way, too, as far as the GPM is concerned, but not as far as the aberration is concerned. Life is what has thrown this thing awry. All right, so we say to this fellow then, when he runs down and starts to catch his breath on the subject, and the automaticities are out of the way, you have to sort of sit back and wait for the automaticities to roll on this kind of a process. You say to the individual, how would it make another or others wrong? Or who would it make wrong and how? I don't care how you put it, you see. But it's who wrong out that way, you see, and you right. That's the way the question has to be designed. And if the question is completely designed in this fashion, you'll get another rolling avalanche that will finally wind up with some earlier life, that is this life usually, key-in, cognition of some kind or another. He'll find the first person he's trying to make wrong on it. Very often this happens. You don't have to direct it very much. He'll do most of his direction on it. And then you turn around and you ask him again, well, how would it make you right and how would it make you wrong? Well, it tends to make a repetitive type process out of it. I'm not actually giving you a repetitive process. For instance, I'm looking at a student here that would be going over to a central organization soon. There's two or three bad boys around that organization that have been raised in hell with themselves and everybody else. It would take, in actual fact, a good ITSA line and two questions to resolve the whole ready mess. How does borrowing money make you right? And a half an hour later, how does borrowing money make others wrong? It might not even be real to him, and he might have an awful time doing it. But that's the end of that behavior. Now, this is processing actually below the level of recognition or cognition. You can dig this one awful deep with a pickaxe. you can also do some weird things to a case in changing its behavior going along this line. But too much of a good thing is too much of a good thing, and it's a hunt-and-punch process. In actual fact, contained in this is the answer to neurosis. Neurosis could be defined as an antisocial action or an anti-survival action, which is compulsively undertaken by the individual. We just wrapped up the work of Sigmund Freud. It's as elementary as that. You understand, if you don't intend to make the person happy, don't intend to make the person cheerful, don't intend anything except just fit the person better into the social framework, and if that's all that mental therapy is for, you got it wrapped up. I think it's faster than implanting. Now, in the first place, the only condition for this sort of thing is we have to be more capable of communicating. Perhaps. We have to be able to communicate to the person, in that we would have to listen to the person. We'd have to listen to the person. We'd have to ask the person a question. But we'd also have to get our hands on the person in order to do that. The cowboy in the black hat has to get his hands on the person to implant him, too. And they also have to do some communication, too, don't they? And then they create a hell of an ARC break, don't they? I think they get twice as much aberrated behavior afterwards. I don't think it's the solution. I don't think the development of mental technology for the purpose of aberrating people down to a level of powerlessness where they won't bother us, I don't think that's a successful approach. Now, let's just be practical. It has nothing to do with decency or overt motivators or anything else. Let's just be cold-bloodedly practical, as cold-bloodedly practical as these characters fancy themselves to be. I don't think that it's valuable. I don't think it's valuable technology. It's valuable to know about it, of course, from your point of view, but as far as knowing how to implant people and calling that a mental technology, or knowing how to give somebody a transorbital leucotomy and calling that mental healing, knowing how to shoot somebody with some weird powder or something of the sort that makes them bounce about in the middle of the floor for an hour or two, it looks to me like all of those lines of action are unsuccessful. I don't think they're successful. They always have a hole in them. And the hole in them is that survival can futurely be threatened. Suppose anybody ever undid it. I wish I had a nickel for every implant station that's ever been destroyed. I've known Thetans to make a career out of it. In fact, I've known Thetans to tilt a planet 10 or 15 degrees with the equivalent avalanches and glacial epochs and so forth, or pull the air cover of a civilization just because it went on implanting. In fact, there's a lot of things happened because of this. Why? Because somebody was implanting. I don't think it's a sensible solution at all. In fact, I don't think it's a solution. I just think it's a dramatization of rightness and wrongness. I don't think there's any more intention behind it than that. Look at the amount of time and effort and energy expended. Why, in any given day, the appropriation of the U.S. Armed Forces is probably less than the Markavian appropriation for the maintenance of implant stations. I think it's expensive. I just think they do it because they're trying to be right. I don't see any other reason for it at all. They're trying to be right and make others wrong, that's all. Now, you can add political significance just as you can on Rusk's pronunciamentos. NATO must be in accord with the Franco-Berlin Wall unity. Because the Rudy Rods are all on the left side of the rifles. And therefore, all us Turks must pull together with all us Hungarians because the great Entente of Northern Rhodesia must be maintained. Well, it's not quite as insane as that, but in actual fact, if you take it apart and examine it very carefully, the aggregate sum total of it is insane. It is not sensible. What's the end product of it? The end product of it is no solution and a worsening condition. And whenever you see this rightness and wrongness situation where somebody is acting simply to be right and making others wrong simply to make others wrong, you know, there's no more action to it than that, no more reason to it than that. Whenever you see that, you'll see a worsening condition. Wherever that zone and area is, you'll see things worsening. The young girl trying to make her mother wrong with sexual misbehavior. That young girl is getting worse herself and is making her family worse, don't you see? In other words, it isn't that a status quo is being maintained. You're getting a dwindling spiral out of this sort of thing. It's the last dregs of domination, this whole action. No matter how covert it is, it's still an effort to dominate. It's like the guy lying on the ground with four knives in him. He's still being right. And the enemy is still wrong. It's still his final effort, you see, to dominate the enemy. And many of these methods of dominating the enemy exist. And it's just an aberrated war which is in progress. Now, we look over this implant situation as an implantation proposition. And we cannot really assign to it any improvement of circumstances. If any improvement of circumstances existed, it existed for such a short term as to render it relatively useless. A short term on the whole track might even go to 100,000 years. That's a short term. That's no duration for anyone. They might say, well, we've got it all licked here, we've got it all solved, but they haven't. They've just got a lid on, and you'll notice the situation deteriorates. The situation gets worse, gets worse, gets worse. So the very activity that enters in upon this type of a rightness-wrongness solution, we're doing what we are doing simply to be right and simply to make somebody else wrong. Anytime any solution is entered which has that sole rationale, you can then expect a continuous worsening, not only of the person who is engaging in enforcing that solution, but also the people in that person's vicinity. So the whole thing becomes a dwindling spiral. This thing is going to develop leaks sooner or later. It's going to blow out at the edges, don't you see? Any such situation is going to go blingo someplace or another, because it isn't a solution, it's a dramatization. Now, you may not suspect it, but you are looking at the final ranks, not only of neurosis, but psychosis. That is the madman. That is the madman. He sees spiders on the wall. Medical treatment consists of telling him there are no spiders on the wall. This looks to me like one madman handling another madman. Both with the same solution. The madman is saying, I am being right and you are being wrong. And the person, quote, handling his case, unquote, is saying, I am being right and you are being wrong. Because of this basic agreement, you find many of these medicos winding up themselves in the padded cells. First place, they don't understand what they are doing. They don't understand that their solution is just as crazy as the patient's assertions. Guy's having trouble thinking, cut his brain up. Can't think. (Laughs) Well, ding, 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 here comes the wagon, man. This is nonsense, don't you see? I mean, there isn't anything to be gained in this. I don't see anything happening on the subject of medical mental healing, but more insane people. The insane population of the world is going up, 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 and the medical doctors say they've got to have more people to take care of these insane. And there got to be more buildings to take care of. And statistics are increasing. Statistics are going up. There are more and more people going insane. And therefore, you've got to have more doctors to make more people insane. You begin to look at this after. You say, what the devil is wrong with a legislator who won't look over the fact the statistics are rising on insanity? Therefore, the money we have been appropriating it for is being wasted. Obviously, there's no proper solution to this. We obviously have the wrong people on the job. But they never do this because they're engaged themselves in a rightness, wrongness type of piece of nonsense. And most of government is how to be wrong convincingly. So the end product of the thing is no solution, don't you see? You want to know why they did this to you, or why you ever did something to somebody. In the final analysis, the overt motivator sequence hinges basically, simply upon this aberration concerning survival, the effort to dominate, which falls into a contest of I'm right and you're wrong. Now both sides are saying I'm right and you're wrong, and therefore you get a double clashing sort of a proposition. You have A saying I'm right and you're wrong. You have B saying, I'm right, and you're wrong. You get a natural commingling of their ideas. After a while, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. They don't know what's right. They don't even know what they started out to say was right. You see? Now, a mental technology, so-called, which engages itself upon the worsening of people, or making people wrong and making themselves right, as an exclusive activity, is not, in essence, a very broad or a very intelligent technology. This is hardly worthy of the name technology, yet it does have technology, don't you see? It certainly is not a mental science which embraces very much understanding. There's very little understanding involved in this thing. Something like the psychologist or Pavlov. If you put a young man on the table and make a dog bark, the young man slavers. I'm being sarcastic. Well, I don't know. I'm tempted to say on the subject, you see, well, I don't know. I look around and I'm not having any trouble with slavering dogs. I mean, why are we working on this problem? It's as idiotic a statement, you see, as their own conclusions. Stimulus response mechanisms and so forth. Why be interested in a stimulus response mechanism? That tells us right there that somebody must be interested in being right and making the other fellow wrong. Don't you see? A stimulus response mechanism. That's as far as they ever advanced. Stimulus response mechanism. Well, stimulus response be damned. The consequences of the stimulus response is what the Scientologist is interested in. And that goes at once into the overt motivator sequence. You move right on upstairs from stimulus response, you see, into a proper piece of technology. They seem to have avoided that whole piece of technology. Why? Because they're only interested in being right and making somebody else wrong, don't you think? Now, a mental science cannot be worthy of the name mental science if it keeps dramatizing one of its parts. That outlaws anything which continues to dramatize one of its parts, you see, it outlaws it from the proper name of a complete understanding. You said a science be a complete understanding of something. Well, if something is dramatizing one of its parts, it certainly does not have a complete understanding of life. Now, the sciences of life are difficult just to this degree. You are living. See, you have a day-by-day interrelationship with the laws of life. And to rise superior to this in any way whatsoever is so phenomenal as not to have happened ever before. It's one of these tricks. It's by your own bootstraps, don't you see? And for a while, if you know all the aberrative angles, you find yourself batting about in the bottle like a blue fly, see? Every direction you fly, you run into something else. If you started analyzing your own behavior in a single day according to the basics that you know, and if you had all of them available in Scientology, you see, if you analyzed your behavior throughout any 24-hour period, you'd find out a short period of that time somewhere along the line you're dramatizing something. In fact, you wouldn't have to do very much analysis. In fact, right now, all these people out in front of me are dramatizing breathing. Automaticity. They think to stay alive, they have to breathe. You tell some doll at some place and his jaw would drop, you know. You say, well, you can't live on Xnu because there's no air. There'd be a lot of beings that look at you awfully blankly. What you want air for? What's the air supposed to do? Well, air. You got to have air. You got to have oxygen. What you going to do on Xnu that you need oxygen for? They try to figure it out how you're going to put it in bottles or sell it for you. Then you got a new fuel for rocket ships. They finally understand what you were talking about. They finally understand that you were peculiar. You get the idea. So a total cessation of the dramatization of the game called life, you see, renders one, at first glance, in a very confused situation, since he's trying not to dramatize its various parts, you see, and yet he inevitably must dramatize certain of its parts. And then he finally comes to the conclusion, in order not to dramatize life, you climb away to a large cave on the side of a very bare mountain and hope people will put crusts of bread outside while you sit and meditate and don't have anything whatsoever to do with life. Now, by not having anything to do with life, you have now rendered yourself free of dramatizing life. Oddly enough, there's enough workability to that. You get away from all restimulative factors and your restimulation dies down. Get less restimulative, feel quite calm. So you say, well, this is the way to do it. You don't be any part of life. No, the real challenge of a science of life is to know it and be able to live. Be able to live that life, you see. That's the real challenge. And oddly enough, if you know all the answers, you can always do that. It isn't necessary because you know a half a dozen lies, you see, that you think are answers. It isn't necessary to go crawling off to some cave all by your lonesome. You can stand out in the middle of life and live life, don't you think? The final challenge of a science of life is, does it produce life? Not does it produce death. When you analyze this thing all the way on down, it'll leave you kind of buggy at first. You get all sorts of weird ideas. Well, maybe I ought to stop auditing. Maybe I ought to leave auditing. And maybe I ought to get back to my knitting or whatever else I was doing, don't you see? And I ought to something or other. And then you suddenly realize that what you're trying to do is drop part of what you were doing, you see, in order to get away from what you were dramatizing. In order not to dramatize, you can get into an awful confused state. You can sit around for days trying to sort something out along those lines. Well, that's all right. It's enough to realize, however, that you are in a situation where it can be sorted out. And that's a remarkable situation to be in. Very remarkable situation to be in. Myself, I had to groove off the importances of existence. What are the important things? Because time making a problem, you see, has made it necessary to concentrate on certain importances of existence and wrap these various things up. Well, that's very proper solution to the thing, but it certainly isn't inactive. It's flat out, flat out activity going along at a very high rate. I notice that there's more and more of a tendency, more and more of a tendency as one goes along the line, to recognize more and experience more life. He doesn't have to work so hard to experience life. That's one of the things. A person who can't experience very much has to work very hard to experience something. And get all involved trying to experience existence. Existence is all around them. Walk down the street and they're experiencing existence. But convince themselves that they are surviving. They think they have to stand under a truck. And that is another way of going about it. They have to suffer impacts. They have to be in their living. What is living to them? Well, living to them, you find to some degree, is being right. They have to be convinced that they are being right, or convinced that they are surviving, or convinced they are dominating something, you see. You take some king of olden times. Why, there he sat upon his huge throne and so forth, and all of his courtiers are saying bog bog and bow bow and walking backwards three quarters of the entrance hall, don't you see, and bumping into the guards and messing it up. All of which is simply designed to convince this fellow that, and convince others that he is dominating. You see? Well, I'd say he couldn't have had much of an impression on people if he had to work at it that hard. That's simply the mechanism of domination. You find anybody who has to work at it that hard, see, he's practically dead, man. He'd be gasping most of the time. You find some teenager, for instance, out here going to dances and listening to music and diving and experiencing all sorts of weird new thrills and sensations and so forth, and trying to convince themselves they're alive. Don't you see? They're half dead about 9/10 of the time. They're having a hard time of it. But a science of life should bring about living. Now, there is a level at which rightness and wrongness ceases to be analytical or comprehensible. And when we speak of aberration, it's when it drops below that point. It isn't that trying to be right is wrong. It's obsessively being right about something that's obviously wrong, that goes loopy. That's when that mechanism goes astray, and the level of neurosis is only reached when the individual is no longer able to select his own courses of behavior, when he is obsessively following courses of behavior in order to be right. Now, everybody has a few of these. You can all try them on for size. This fellow eats salads. He hates salads. But he eats salads. And you just get on this. Is there anything you're doing that you really don't like to do? And this fellow says, oh, I just don't like to eat salads. You say, well, how does eating salads make you right? How does it make somebody else wrong? Now, you're going to get into an interesting situation where you're going to find out he has been already overwhelmed on the subject of salads. This thing is going to cross back the other way. It's a question of how was mother right in making everybody wrong on the subject of salads, don't you see? And that is not a good processing question. That's somebody else's aberration, so we're not particularly interested in that. So we just bring him up to that point, and this thing will snap. You've got a lot of these things, but by and large, they have no value. They have no value. It isn't until a person reaches inability, weakness, stupidity, and other such like things as a way to be right that the dwindling spiral is entered. Now, he's being right by being unable. When you see that one loom over the horizon in any zone of behavior, you have approaching neuroses if it's not there already. And when a civilization goes all out for this, watch it, because it's going to be dead tomorrow. The dust is going to be moaning through its temples and the tumbleweed rolling down its freeways, because that civilization has already entered in upon the necessity to be unable in order to be right. The way to make somebody else wrong, then, is to be nuts, incapable. Now, a dramatization, any dramatization, entering in upon this whole field of mental science, which brings about a further disability, is wrong for that civilization, no matter how right that civilization thinks it is. And anything which enters a civilization into more life, more livingness, more ARC, and so forth, is, of course, by basic definition, right for that civilization. So you see, it's also capable, it also renders itself susceptible to understanding what one should do, as well as knocking out neuroses. Now, anything that is mad in an individual at some higher level was okay. All madness is simply an exaggeration of some ability or capability. It's some perversion or exaggeration of this. Let us take in the lower rungs of it. Well, let's take sexual misbehavior of some kind. This, of course, is a lower harmonic enforcement of the ability to create. Way upscale, by the time you get this thing all mixed up and clouded up and this way and that way, you get it down here, you've got some sexual disability of some kind or another, and that is how the person is still being right above this upper thing, you see? So these things really enter along this line. Way up here, it was right, really right, you see? And then it came down a little bit, and it was a method of survival. And then it was a method of dominating. And then it was a method of being right in order to make others wrong. And then in that contest, one got enough overts. The communication line did a switcheroo, don't you see? So what was right about it is now wrong about it. But what is wrong about it is now right about it. And we've got this thing all the way down to the bottom of the scale. It's very recognizable where it came from. But it's gone through all of this switcheroo and down the line. It's practically unrecognizable from its immediate state as far as person behavior is concerned. This fellow is an artist. He could paint, let us say, he could paint a side of a house, you see, you know, with a beautiful scene, you know. Boom, nothing to it, you know. And you find this fellow down there nursing a girl's shoe, you see, to his chest. And he hides this all the time. It's a girl's shoe, and he sniffs it occasionally. You know, gives him kick, you see. I mean, it's more or less the same channel, but there, the upper scale ability has become the lower scale mockery. And you get these lower scale mockeries all the time, get the upper scale abilities in trouble. And once in a while you go around feeling ashamed of yourself for having suddenly thought you could do something about the United States or something like that, because some nut in the booby hatch is talking all the time about doing something for the United States, don't you? Well, the difference is you probably could and he couldn't. Slight difference of ability. Now, when you look over this whole panorama of behavior and what a person is trying to do, you enter in upon an ability to understand much of the nonsense which at the present moment you may only be protesting against. You just look around on it. But this task is rendered very difficult by the fact that the explanations so obscure the kernel of insanity of the rightness-wrongness, it's very hard to get at what they are really doing. I don't know what the United States is doing today. Maybe it's having a revolution. But it's being right about something. It's being right about something, and it's making people wrong about something. We're not sure what it is. But on a careful analysis or on an auditing level, we could discover those two points. The moment we discovered them, they'd all go unsnarl. So a science of life, actually, is a science of examination of behavior. And behavior is based upon lots of ramifications, tremendous explanations in all directions, but narrowed right on down to the middle, looked at in its bare bones. It comes down to survival, dominate, rightness, and wrongness. That becomes the main line of behavior. I hope sometime when you're looking at somebody who is sitting there picking bugs off himself, one after the other, cockroach here and a cootie there, let us hope you don't jump back to keep them from getting on you. Let's hope also you don't try to convince him that there are no bugs there. Because you are now playing the one game which makes him make you wrong. And at that moment you will cut your communication line, just like that. So now he has only one purpose in view, and that is to make you wrong. And you can cave him in, you can deteriorate him, you can put him further down scale, but you can't bring him back up the line again. It's impossible. Because you've taken the one step to cut the communication line which could have made it all right. You see that? So a dramatization of rightness and wrongness is not the answer to a dramatization of rightness and wrongness. And probably out of all the factors of a science of life, that one you would have to know. Otherwise, you would simply get trapped into the dwindling spiral of everything you tried to do anything about anyplace. It is the essential piece of understanding which is necessary to keep you free of going the chute. Okay, thank you.